Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come up with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. My name is Ben Baker, and welcome to the show. Every single week, I'm amazed at the number of people that email me, if you like, at ben@yourbrandmarketing.com. Join our merry crew of men and women. We love you everywhere that you want to be. If you go to the Your Living Brand Live Show, click on the subscribe button. There is a million different ways to subscribe. If you're a Spotify person, if you're an iTunes person, if you're a SoundCloud person, subscribe on the channel that you really love, because if we're not there, tell me and I'll get us there. It's fun being everywhere and anywhere and let people listen in the way that's good for them. So thank you all for being such an amazing audience. And this week, I've got Olga Kirschenbaum. Did I say that right, Olga?
That's correct.
Perfect. It's always hate butchering people's names. Olga and I met, oh God, I don't even know how long ago over LinkedIn. You and I have been LinkedIn buddies for a while now.
It must have been, I think on the second start of my LinkedIn journey, I had two.
Yeah.
So we met, I think, in late 2018. That's when I was really starting to pick up my second journey. But my first journey was 5 years before that. I was in a job where I wasn't very happy, started networking, and someone asked me for a cup of coffee. I was like, okay, why not? So we end up having a conversation. He's like, you got to get out of where you're at. And he says, I host a BNI event every week. Why don't you come? I have an amazing recruiter. She does admin placing, but I'm sure they have a finance person in the group. I'm sure she'll introduce you. So I go to this event and I meet her. I sent her my resume that morning and she put me in touch with a finance person. And after that, I was working with them for a good 5 years. Basically, had I not had that coffee, I'm not sure I would have had my second go at LinkedIn.
That's awesome. BNI is such an incredible organization. I was a member maybe 10 years ago. I think I've been on LinkedIn for 10 or 12 years now. I'd have to go back and take a look and see exactly when I joined in. But we had Ivan Meisner on the show actually a little while ago.
Nice.
For people who don't remember, Ivan is the founder of BNI. Absolutely an incredible story. I'll put the notes to that in the show so people do it. But BNI allows people to really connect. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, it's an amazing organization that really it's givers gain. And it allows people to really get to know people, build trust, build relationships. And it's amazing the things that come out of those conversations.
Absolutely. I definitely think it was the LinkedIn, instead of being virtual, it was the original LinkedIn where people were really creating connections with people outside of their area of expertise, outside of their circle, meeting new people. And the idea was we're going to refer clients to each other because we know each other. I know right. You do great work. They're really similar.
It's about trust.
Yeah.
Getting into what you do, into the finance industry, trust is everything.
Absolutely.
If people don't trust you, I'm certainly not going to give you my money if I don't trust you. And I'm not going to let you take care of my money if I don't trust you.
Absolutely. And, especially when it comes to the abundance work that I do with my clients, it's sometimes digging into personal conversations, things that have scarred people from their childhoods. And if you don't have that trust, they're not going to come to you.
Yeah. So before we get into that, why don't you give everybody a history about who you are, what you do, why you do it, and who you do it for? And tell me the story, Olga.
Short summary is I am a money coach and I help I empower creatives to get comfortable with money. So the way I started, I knew I wanted to be an accountant when I was in high school. So I was one of those people. I was like, I'm going to be an accounting major before I even knew what school I was going to. And I always had a knack for solving money puzzles. My friends and family always came to me for advice. And when I started the accounting degree, it just was natural for me. I really enjoyed it, which not many accountants can say. And I just kind of went with that. And I always thought, you know, we always hear about companies doing so well.
No.
People always living paycheck to paycheck. And I wanted to see where the differences were. And I realized, really, companies, they have budgets. They manage their cash. And most people don't because they don't know how. So I spent 10 years working as an accountant. I spent a couple of years in a CPA firm. Then the rest was corporate accounting. And it wasn't fulfilling for me. I loved it. I loved the work, but there's no joy. So early 2018, I found myself let go from a job where I was already unhappy. And I decided to do some soul searching. Part of it was I was getting into jobs that were great on paper, but something at the end was never satisfying. And I wanted to find out what that thing was so I wouldn't go into another job and just end up in the same unhappy situation. And I landed on money coaching, mostly because I get so much joy following up with people and hearing what kind of progress they've made. And this goes back to when I was in high school. So I graduated knowing I wanted to be an accountant. One of my friends says, hey, I have this part-time job and it's going to be full-time in the summer. I want to manage that cash and not have to worry about shifts and focus on school. How do I work around that? We talk about mindful spending, how to forecast for personal spending. And she calls me back 5 years later. She's about to graduate and says, hey, I actually saved the entirety of my student loans.
Wow.
Do I pay it off the day after graduation or do I piecemeal it? And I said, are you crazy? How many of our friends would love to just say, hey, no student loans and I'm starting fresh? So I started piecing together a lot of these stories that I was kind of taking for granted, the impact I was having on people's lives. And I just decided to go for it. Kind of goes back to my second journey on LinkedIn is I wasn't sure what I wanted that to look like, but I knew that LinkedIn was a great place for testing. It's great for getting feedback. And I just started putting money posts out there, writing money blogs. And that's how I kind of started piecing together what it was going to look like. So now I work with creatives because I think they have the most interesting puzzles. There's always something different. I help them make friends with the money in their lives and their businesses. And once they get a foundation of good money habits, we begin to go into the abundance work that I mentioned, which is more mindset work. And we start with money, obviously, but the way I describe it, money is my in. Because once you begin to apply the abundance mindset to money, it actually begins to trickle to everything else.
I want to explore the abundance thing. I absolutely love that. But I'm curious about the creatives because they're an interesting group. Creatives are an interesting group because you know if there's a group that has ups and downs and times where they're flush and times where they're absolutely dead poor, creatives are who you think of because it's not, you know, one of those type of lifestyles that lends itself to regular paychecks and for a variety of different reasons. You know, I'm thinking of friends of mine that are in the theater business, thinking of artist friends of mine, I'm thinking of sculptor friends of mine, you know, that I've watched them sell $100,000 pieces and then not sell anything for a year and a half and everything in between. And so helping that society, part of society, you know, with people that are fascinating people, that are creative people, but money is just not something that's in their DNA for most of them. How did you first get into that? And how do you get them to see the fiscal responsibility where they're so used to, you know, starve and stake, for lack of a better word?
Yeah. So I actually was working with creatives pretty much the entire time I was working corporate. Outside of the CPA firm, I think that I'd say 7 years out of the 10 years that I worked in companies, and it was advertising companies, visual effects, ebook publishing. So I was already constantly surrounded by super incredibly talented people, and I would see this lack in financial literacy. And the reality is, once I started doing my money coaching work, I realized the actual truth is that they all know that they need to be better at it. But this is also why I started getting into the abundance work, because a lot of the time they know they need a budget. They know that they need to manage their cash flow. They don't have the tools to do that. But for creatives, they're telling themselves stories that make it seem that this is how it's supposed to be. So for example, starving artist, that's a story we hear all the time. You know, a lot of kids get talked out of going to art school because their parents don't want them to be a starving artist.
And they don't want to have to support them the rest of their life.
Exactly.
What they perceive that they're going to have to support them the rest of their life.
Exactly. And what I started noticing, another pattern with creatives, is that they believe that because they love what they do, they should be getting paid either less or they should be doing it for free. And they should be doing something that they dread to make that happen. And then when you're a creative business owner, what ends up happening oftentimes is they dread the money part and they don't do it. They are just kind of in a hamster wheel all the time. And they explain to themselves that it's okay because I'm an artist. It's supposed to be hard.
I've got a graphic designer that I've worked with for years, and it's gotten to a point where I just send her monthly amounts of money because getting her to invoice me is painful.
Yeah.
I know that I owe her $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, but I keep saying, so when are you going to invoice me? When you, I'll get around to it. I'm like, no, listen, you don't understand. I have the money now. My customers paid me, or I need an invoice from you
right
in order for me to invoice my client. Oh, I'll get around to it. Well, how much do I, I don't know. It's about, you know, 200 hours. I'm like, no, I need to know these things. It's getting people, and you know, and they're some of the most genuine, creative, wonderful people that I know. But you're right. Money is something that's like, oh my God, I can't talk about it, or it's beyond me, or it's embarrassing to talk about money. And how do you move people beyond that? And it's not just creatives. A lot of people are embarrassed because they think that they need to know everything about money to talk about money. And you don't. You need to be able to ask intelligent questions.
Yeah. And I think that's the key there. And my approach to teaching, especially creatives, is you don't have to become an accountant overnight. And my approach is really, I kind of teach them with my mistakes. I may not have an example of everything that you can make a mistake with money in, but I always lead with my downfalls just because I'm an accountant. I know so many accountants who know better on paper, but they will still make those mistakes. Like, I can resonate with what you just said and not wanting to invoice your clients. I hate doing my book, but
I would have thought you would be the first person. Okay, it's the 15th of the month. Okay, sit down, invoices go out.
I think this is my other approach to it. I am quite a creative person for an accountant.
Sure.
And once I became the business owner and no longer the financial controller, the management person, that's when I started seeing how easy it is. It's so simple. A month goes by so quickly. Mm-hmm. And you're having fun doing what you're doing. You don't want to sit there, create invoices. But here's the thing, because I have the accounting background, I'm able to work around that. I remember my first year in business. It was less than a full year. I was like, how many expenses could I possibly have? I'm just going to catch up in a month. And I did this to myself for 3 months. In the last 3 months of the year, I had to sit there catching up for 3 months of transactions
To
be able to get my taxes done. And I was like, first of all, I should know better. What are you doing? But I knew why it happened. So that doesn't happen again. I was like, let's put things in place. So when I do invoice people, it's automated. When I have expenses coming in, it's all automated. I have everything set up. I get that receipt in my email. I will forward it to an email that's connected to my QuickBooks file. I have the app on my phone that if it's actual receipts I'm getting, I'm snapping them and it's in and I don't have to think about it. I just have to set time to review. And in reality, that saves me hours. So that time that I was catching up on the 3 months of not heavy traffic for my business because it was my first 6 months, that took me 6 hours and it didn't have to.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. The YourBrandMarketing.live podcast is sponsored by How to Retain Employees Through Leadership online course. Go to courses.yourbrandmarketing.com. That's courses.yourbrandmarketing.com and put in Your Living Brand 50 for a $50 coupon. Thanks a lot. Welcome back to the Your Living Brand Live Show. And I remember my first year going out on my own, and this is what, 13 years ago. I made so many mistakes in setting up my books and maintaining my books and all that, that it probably cost me an extra $2,000 or $3,000.
Yeah.
And, you know, bringing in a bookkeeper at the last minute to explain to me what I did wrong, what I needed to do right, and help me set up a process that if I'd done it a year earlier, it would have been so much simpler. It would have been so much easier. And, you know, today, you know, it's right. Twice a month, I get my receipts together and I go through them because, quite honestly, I do a lot of large jobs. I don't do a lot of work.
Yeah.
So it's just because of the type of work that I do, it's a lot easier to do it on a bi-monthly basis. But if, you know, what you're saying, those creating the systems is what makes it easy. If you can make things systematic and you don't have to think about it, it probably makes people feel more comfortable and say, hey, I can do this.
Absolutely. And the thing that's interesting, you know, what you just said, for you, it makes sense to do it every 2 weeks. There are businesses who are probably should be doing it once a week, but having that knowledge of just how it works, someone explaining it to you very simply in the beginning, first of all, if you do it right from the beginning, it's going to be so much easier to put together and actually make sense of it. That way, when your transactions and your business grow, which you, of course, want it to happen, it's going to make sense to you how it's growing. And you can tell yourself, hey, I don't need to do it every week. Some companies can do it once a month because that's how little transactions they have. But you need to have someone explain it to you in the beginning. That's my thinking. But that's also not to say, because I've worked with people who have neglected it for 5 years, it's better to have someone come in and get it all together, fix it, and then you'll be able to move forward. What I can promise you, regardless of how you may think it's a painful experience and that's why you're not looking forward to it or you're going through it right now, you're going to feel so much stress lifted off your shoulders. I had a client describe it as she was walking around with her fist clenched and she didn't even realize it until she had these money epiphanies, essentially. And that's what it is. We always underestimate the stress that it causes and we overestimate how scary it's going to be to actually face that situation.
Well, we fear the unknown.
Always.
I don't care what it is. We fear the unknown. And I think that as we're moving into a new stage of the economy, that's where people are thinking is that, oh my God, what's next? And I think it's that those dark rooms, it's those corners that you can't see around. It's that type of thing that people are scared of. So you're scared of that you don't know what you don't know.
Of course.
And it's the things that we don't understand that we feel foolish and say, well, I should understand money. I should understand how to handle my books. I should understand how to balance a checkbook. But everything needs to be taught in life.
Absolutely.
We're born and we don't know how to speak. Yeah, you know, we know how to communicate, but we don't know how to speak.
Yep.
There are certain things that are innate, but most things in life need to be taught. And the more we can align ourselves with people that understand things and can teach them in a way that resonate with us, the better life is.
Absolutely. But I think that's the other reality that we're living in. We are not taught financial literacy anywhere.
Or taught poorly.
Very true. Or they teach you how to write a check. Or for example, in the US, they're starting to pass financial literacy mandates in states that say the students need to have minimum requirements of financial literacy taught to them. I have read some of these curriculum and frankly, they're terrifying. They don't get to a budget until the fourth module. Now, knowing how public school is, I'm a public school kid, it probably takes months to get to that fourth module. By the time they got there, though, they taught them how to be a good consumer. They taught them how to spend that money before they really made it and what a job is. So I'm not sure that it's actually preparing students to be able to manage anything in their financial life.
It's also the fact that people who are teaching them could be, and I don't mean to belittle it, could be the gym teacher, the shop teacher, whoever, but it's not people that are, they're not dealing with finances for a living.
Yep.
It's not somebody that's their main job. Their job is to make the understanding of financial literacy easy for people to understand and make it relevant to people.
Yep.
And that's not their job. It's an extra course that has been thrown on somebody. It says, well, somebody has to teach this. This is your job this month or your job this year. And because of that, I think a lot of the kids are being really shortchanged. Instead of bringing somebody in for a month saying, you know, volunteers from the major banks, volunteers from accounting firms, volunteers from the financial institutions to come in and talk about these sort of things within the school system. And I think that the schools would be far better served because every one of these organizations are looking for places to volunteer.
Yep. I think the other truth is most people are not financially literate. And
no,
it's hard to teach financial literacy when you don't understand it yourself. I think that's why most people can remember the only thing most people say that they learned in school was how to write a check. And that's probably because most people write checks, well, they did, in their day-to-day life. Nowadays, the reason why people don't get taught how to balance a checkbook, typically because no one balances checkbooks these days.
Nobody writes checks anymore. I'm looking at my checks right now. I last bought 500 checks 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I might have 100 checks left.
Yeah.
Those are my business checks.
Yeah.
Personal checks, maybe I write one or two a year, maybe. And those companies really don't want checks. They would much prefer I give them a Visa card or they much prefer I do an e-transfer.
Absolutely. And also, I think using checks is such an outdated system. I think the US ranks the highest in how many checks get written per month, but it's also one of the number one groups for financial fraud.
Oh, yeah.
Because most people don't know how to also write checks safely, which is huge. For example, now that it's 2020, it's a good idea to write 2020 as the full date in the year because it could also give someone an opportunity to write in 2019. And going back to however, and some they say banks won't cash checks past 6 months, but they've done it before. I've seen it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When was the last time somebody actually asked you to give you two pieces of ID when you get a check? I mean, it used to be you went into the grocery store, you gave them a check, they asked you for two pieces of ID.
Yep.
I think that they get so few checks these days that people wouldn't even think about to ask or wouldn't even know to ask for that.
I think a lot has been taken for granted when it comes to how many times do you pay with a debit card or a credit card? I mean, with a debit card, you have to put in your PIN number at least, but I haven't had my ID checked with a credit card, all sorts of amounts that I'm paying for, you know?
Yeah. No, nobody checks a signature anymore. Nobody does anything anymore. It's all PIN pad, you know, based or tap systems.
Yeah.
And therefore, but it comes down to, as you're right, it, you know, as we digress a little bit, but it's important. It's about getting people to understand the nuances of their finances and getting people comfortable with the understanding of it's okay not to know everything.
Yep.
It's not okay to ignore it.
Absolutely. Most people that are really frustrated that I work with tend to be people who have been kind of putting their heads in the sand for years. I mean, I've seen it happen with business owners that have had businesses for over 10 years and it's ruined their lives. It's ruined their marriages. It takes a huge toll on you and it could be something that's even profitable, but because you've ignored it for so long, it's kind of like an avalanche. It begins really tiny and it can snowball out of control really quickly.
So let's move from there, because I think we've handled that. People have got to sit there and good understanding of their own finances and finding somebody that can help them with that. But let's move into that wonderful word that you came up with at the beginning of this, abundance. How do you help people move from the day-to-day understanding of how much money they're spending today or weekly or monthly to getting them into that abundance mentality? Because I think that that's going to be really important moving forward to get people into a mentality of we don't need to spend every penny that we make.
Yep. Well, I have to go through the process of building a foundation with these people typically because very few people come to me already with the good habits. The good habits are really about cash management and understanding where it's going. And for me, that's just the first piece. It's great to manage your cash and know where everything is going. And unless you move from that place of fear and into abundance mindset, you're not going to be able to get the most that you can out of your money. So for example, I worked with someone, we put the systems in place to make sure that, you know, the basics are put together and they're not difficult. When he gets paid, he knows where everything needs to funnel out, business, personal, taken care of. It's not that much work for him. To get into the abundance mindset, we started doing exercises, and it's things like you go to the coffee shop in the morning and you really love a pastry, but you can't afford a pastry. But can you though? And what kind of benefits will that pastry have on your day? So for example, $5, an extra $5. This person who has their money all taken care of is still thinking, I don't have enough. And it's really a story that they're telling themselves. And once we talk about how much that pastry can actually add joy to their lives. So as a coach, if I'm not feeling great, I can't coach my clients as best as I can. So as business owners, sometimes that means if I start my day with that wonderful pastry, maybe just Mondays, let's say, because let's not buy pastries every day. But let's say you start the week or you have some sort of important meeting that day. You really love a pastry. You go to the coffee shop as you normally do. You get a pastry and you sit there and you actually enjoy it. And then it puts you on a mindset where you're feeling so much better. You had a little bit of pleasure already for the day. If you're having 5 sales calls that day, you're going to be in a better mood. You're already setting yourself up for more abundance in your life. Now, sometimes the trick is to switch that thinking. So if you're thinking, you know, $5, it's a lot of money, and you have everything put together, usually it's asking questions like, okay, if you spend this $5 today for the week on a pastry, is that going to make or break your rent this month? I don't think so.
And if it is, we're having a different conversation.
Exactly. Yes, yes. But I think that's why I love the work so much. It's really personal. So the pastry example may not work for everyone, but what I like to do is finding patterns in people and really connecting it with the joys in their lives. Because a pastry for this person is something that they look forward to. They light up when they talk about it.
Right.
For someone else, it could be actually not including anything about money. It's actually, you can actually have fun for free and looking for those opportunities. And this kind of goes back to what I said earlier. We start with the money piece, but the abundance work really begins to kind of bleed out to everything else. Because once you have abundance and money and you begin to appreciate that, you kind of begin to see it everywhere else in your life. So I've seen clients, they're beginning to pick up these abundance mindset habits, not even realizing why that's happening. And it's because their parent is also feeling so much better about themselves. They're not feeling that stress of money. I mean, I've had money blocks, and a lot of it has to do with my immigrant upbringing. Mm-hmm. My parents are from communist Russia, or they grew up in communist Russia. There's so much money talk there about like how everyone's supposed to be equal. You're not supposed to have a lot of money. But the reality is the more money you have in your life, it gives you more opportunities. So it's really switching those mindsets and seeing money as a friend. That's really what I'm trying to do at the end. No matter if I'm working with individuals, business owners, it's really to get them to see it as a friend.
Well, yeah, because for me, it's not the Danish in the morning. It's buying a box of Danishes and bringing it to the office or bringing it to a client, you know, to a client to their office and seeing the joy that it brings other people. And what it does is not only does that make me feel better and it brings joy into my life, but it also spreads the joy into other people's lives and it makes their days better, makes them more effective, allows them to connect with each other on a different level and connect with me on a different level. And it just spreads. I'm a big believer of dropping the pebbles in the water and watching those ripple effect. But you're right. It's how we think about money and how we view money, whether it's a stressor for us or whether it's something that we use to be able to achieve goals.
Yep.
Is that thought process. And I love the fact that you bring that up because too many people live their life going, I can't afford that, or I can't do that. And they don't do anything because they're saving up for when they're 65 years old and they can retire and then they can go do things. Then they're dead at 68 and they never did anything.
Absolutely.
So it's a matter of understanding that money is a tool to be used to live a life. It's not whoever dies with the most toys wins. It's how did you live your life and how did you build your life with that abundance, using that money as a tool to be able to live your life effectively.
Yeah. And one of my biggest articles that did well was, it was titled, I Wish I Had Enough Money Too. And it really goes back to the stories that we're telling ourselves. If you just switch the wording in that sentence and say, how can I get the money to afford that? It already begins to change the framework of what you're saying. And it's so powerful because I wish I had enough money to get, you're already coming from a place of a scarcity. You're acknowledging that you don't have it, which perpetuates the not having it. But when you say, how can I get enough money to buy that thing, it begins to train your brain to think, well, how do we get there? We may not be there right now, but it's possible.
Yeah, I like to think of, what do we need to do to make that happen?
Yep.
And that's a great thing for business to look at the budget. People say, well, it's not in the budget. Okay, then what do we need to do to make that happen?
Exactly.
Yeah, because yes, there's a budget. Absolutely, there's a pile of money. But that pile of money is not absolute. And it's sitting there saying every single penny is not earmarked for a very specific thing. It's saying there's $100,000 for marketing. Well, yeah. If I can give you a better way to spend that $100,000, maybe we take something out of this in order to be able to afford that. So it's a matter of giving people the opportunity to be able to be successful.
Absolutely.
So two questions that I'm going to let you go.
Yeah.
One is, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
So the best place to get in touch with me is on LinkedIn, or you can check out my blog at ragstorichesconsulting.com. I share money insights, and that includes the article that I mentioned, I Wish I Had Enough Money Too.
Perfect. Now, if you could do me a favor and send me a link to that particular article, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure that we get that in the show notes as well.
Absolutely.
I think that would be a great one to have. And the last question I ask everybody, as you walk out the door, as you leave a meeting, as you get in your car and you drive away or the bus or whatever you do, how do you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
Yeah. You know, I think of the word that I came up for 2020 for myself when I was doing some intention setting for the new year, and it's moxie.
Love that word.
I have lots of tattoos. I am not your typical accountant. And when people think of another accounting book or personal finance book, they think it's going to be a dread and it's going to be a snooze fest. And I'm just not that type of person. So I think that that's how I like to people to think about me when I'm not in the room.
That's awesome. I love it. Olga, you are a ray of sunshine. I love having you on the show. Thanks for making money understandable, because I think it's desperately needed in today's world. So send me a link to all, you know, to your books, to your articles, to how people get in touch with you. I want to be able to share that with the world because God knows they need it.
Awesome. I will definitely do that. And thank you so much, Ben, for having me on.
Loved having you on.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?